Go Gogs.
Oh, welcome to Movie the Podcast. That's right. Movie the Podcast. It's boxing.
Oh, my God. Thanks, Terry Gross. Gogs is back.
Yeah. Dave and B and Cooley over here. We watched Penitentiary 2, a movie. That's all I'll say. It is.
It's a movie.
It literally. It's definitely a movie. This movie has everything. Like, and I mean.
Everything. I mean everything.
I've never Thank seen you. A movie have so much, and still
it's so much movie
so quickly. Like it is wild.
It like, is.
Thank you, Mr. Kennedy, for this movie of sorts.
It's one of it is legitimately like one of the most insane things I've ever seen. And we've seen Penitentiary 3, which has magic in it, and a. We also found out that this director just loves little people.
Yeah, yeah.
In this movie, he like stops the movie twice to have a little person.
He does a push in through the crowd to see the dwarf from Bad Santa running a dice game.
I think that's meant to represent birth because he's coming through the labia.
Oh yeah, God!
Yeah,
and then in Penitentiary 3, he has the sex little
the Haiti kid. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Guts. Oh God, that was Penitentiary 3. We did watch that.
Yes,
there is a chance that Penitentiary 2 is even like a 5 to 6 out of 10. This is the best film trilogy in American cinema history.
I have to watch the first one after this.
Like, not gonna lie to you, Penitentiary 2 might be cresting into like a 9-10 for me because I need to show this movie to everyone I know.
It's like everything that ever happened in the '80s, all in 1 hour and 50 minutes.
It's absolutely insane.
It's in the 80s in the same way that 1976 is the 80s for some reason.
Yeah,
right.
Well, they hadn't figured out the 80s quite yet. They were still clinging on to the 70s pretty heavy in this film.
This movie is like, it's hilariously incompetent, but like also like super earnest. Like it's very interesting.
It's like they're doing interesting things. We'll talk about it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
This movie wasn't one shot, but
we probably won't talk about it on our movie podcast.
I fumbled it a little bit.
I got a weird comment on a video on the Movie the Podcast TikTok where they said I was talking too much in the review, and it's like, What exactly did you want me to do? Like, not talk? Like, I don't understand. Like, okay. Like, 6 minutes of talking. Like, okay.
Shut the fuck up, TJ.
What the fuck am I supposed to do? Like, I don't understand.
Why was Anthony being so mean?
Don't tell.
It'd be funny if they said that just about your TikTok clip review.
Yeah.
Like, he talks too much.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. They should have just reposted it with that fucking... clip that Botchamania uses. You talk too much.
Oh, I talk too much, but if I put that weird shrimp Muppet in 28 fucking slides, then we'd be the shit, right?
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, what did you all watch this week? I'm gonna start off with the man, the myth, the legend, Sean.
Oh, that's me. I didn't really... because I never watch anything. It's a good strategy. I watched the most, I don't know if it's the most recent episode of Dan to Dan or like two episodes, and that still kicks ass. Like it's still kind of finding its footing a little bit after that episode, but I was stomping around the house saying Japanese businessman over and over, so that worked on me.
that episode's great.
Did you pick up
on the Shin Godzilla references in that episode?
Yeah, this show's fucking
pretty amazing.
I watched about 10 episodes of Ronin Warriors. That anybody, I forget, it's called something else in Japan, but like
I don't remember what the original name is, but yeah, I watched it when it broadcast over here. It was awesome.
Yeah, I used to watch it. They gave all the guys in the dub surfer accents though, and one Irish guy. So they're like these very Japanese people. Like, hey, buddy, what are we gonna do about that fucking Inferno armor, bro? Like,
hey, man. It's weird.
I watched. You know, Macross isn't streaming on anything. I guess
that
like you have to buy it or Robotech. Yeah. So TJ and I had briefly talked about there's a very classic, because I'm trying to like expand my kind of like classic anime knowledge because I'm trying to get less pussy as I get older, and there's two that I was looking for. One's called Initial D, which is a street racing one, And then there's one called GTO, which is not about cars. It's called Great Teacher Onizuka, about this like ex, he's not like a Yakuza guy, but he's like one of those youth gang guys. I forget what those are called. I'm sure TJ knows what it is.
I know what it is, but I don't remember the, I don't remember.
Like the River City Ransom guys.
Yeah. They're very popular, very popular in anime. If you want to see a live action representation of it, watch Takashi Miike's Crows Zero, which is a really cool movie.
But it's like he becomes a teacher. I'm like, oh, this is an interesting setup. But this is the 90s and it's Japan. So immediately he's like, I'm going to get all these high school chicks. Oh, my God. And it's like, oh, this is incredibly problematic. So I'll circle back to it at some point once I get over the fact. It's like, oh, yeah, that's how they got down with shit back then. But I didn't watch any movies, so... Wallach!
Wallach. It's Wallach.
So I watched a fuckload of stuff.
Hell yeah. Oh my god.
You should have went first.
This is like Alex Super Bowl, though, because he loves Christmas stuff. So...
I'll put the over-under at 9.5.
Oh my god.
And take the over.
But you know, right? Like that's like if it's you can't gambling.
I watched 10 movies.
Ooh. Wow.
10 movies. Oh, I shouldn't take it under.
Just a bunch of stuff I've already like that everybody knows about. Elf, all three Santa Clauses, Ernest Saves Christmas, Home Alone.
You watched the much maligned Santa Claus 2.
Santa Claus 2 is the best one.
Wow.
Santa Claus 3. Santa Claus 3 is the worst one. The one with Jack Frost.
Yeah, is but I feel like that one gets Santa a lot
Claus,
more love
or is this
Santa
just a movie called Santa Claus? Because I'm lost already.
This is the Santa Claus
with Tim the Toolman Taylor.
That's the legal document version.
Yeah, it's Claus with an E at the end. Fred Claus and Jingle All the Way.
Banger.
Fred Claus is an underrated Christmas movie. Fred Claus is a lot of fun.
Never seen
it. Vince Vaughn, and Vince Vaughn plays Fred Claus, and Paul Giamatti plays Santa. It's very good.
Hey, Alex, as far as the Vince Vaughn Christmas oeuvre goes, how do you feel about Four Christmases?
Fine. It has its moments where it's really funny.
Oh, isn't that the one where
I like the scenes at his dad's house where Jon Favreau and Tim McGraw beat the ever-loving shit out of him.
Isn't Jon Favreau like an MMA fighter in that movie?
Yeah, like they all like him. Both of them are. Tim McGraw and Jon Favreau play as two brothers, and they're both MMA fighters.
And Kenny Powers' girlfriend is Favreau's wife.
Yep, April Big Cannons.
That movie's it's not terrible. It's not like great, but it's funny enough.
Put that on the Blu-ray.
The two movies—it's
funny enough.
The two movies I'm going to talk about. One was Killer Raccoons: Dark Christmas, and it's obviously a low budget, like shitty movie that some guys made on like a $50,000 budget, but they probably sold like their house to get it. It's a sequel that was made like 16 years after a movie called Killer Raccoons. But this one takes place at Christmas time on a train, and it is a spoof ripoff of Under Siege 2 Dark Territory.
Oh my God.
It is insane. It is really absurdly funny at first. It just loses steam because it's too long. But there's a scene that TJ and Sean would have been dying at, or they're in the train station getting ready for a train. And the train number is the 9/11 train.
Oh, hell so
they
yeah.
They keep like 15 times. They're like, all aboard the 9/11 train. All aboard the 9/11 train. Never forget. Never forget. All aboard the 9/11 train. And it's just like absurd shit like that.
Yeah, that's
it's
amazing.
It's so funny. But eventually it's over an hour and a half. And it runs out of gas. But it's got a lot of really funny little bits in it. And like horrible like Microsoft Paint effect, special effects. Sounds and the villains are legitimate killer raccoons that were trained by some bad guys to steal missile codes or something. So that was ridiculous.
Where did you watch that? Oh, like, what was that on?
That feels like a Tubi movie to me.
You might be 100% right. It probably was Tubi. The other thing I watched the brand new holiday movie Red One.
Why'd you do that?
It's getting destroyed in like reviews and stuff.
But I found it
quite fun.
Yeah.
Oh,
it is. Everybody in the movie is acting like it's like deadpan, like it's a dead serious movie, except for Chris Evans, who's taking everything like ridiculously. But like The Rock, J.K. Simmons is Santa, Lucy Liu is like the CIA for mythical creatures or some shit. Everybody's acting like it's a hardcore, like straight drama or like action movie, except for Chris Evans, who is just being charming and funny. I didn't hate it. It's a little long. It kind of like, just like Dark Raccoons or Killer Raccoons, it kind of loses steam. It's over 2 hours long.
Yeah, but of course it is.
I have no idea. I don't understand why people are crushing it so bad. Like, it's not like the best thing I've ever seen.
I think
I think it's
blowback and burnout, right?
Like, you think people? I mean, that might be part of it, but I don't know. What are you gonna do?
I think people are just tired of the fucking Rock. Like,
maybe he'll take a sabbatical now that guy made him cry in that interview or whatever.
He's gonna be in that A24 movie coming out, I think, next year.
Okay.
It's about
summer too.
Sean, who's it about?
Oh, that spring.
It's about Mark Kerr, the Smashing Machine. Great documentary, though.
Yeah, and it's one of the Safdie brothers is making it.
Is that going to be The Rock's comeback?
I mean, it'll probably be good. I mean, you know, I mean, they got an amazing performance out of Adam Sandler in Uncut Gems. So.
I think it's more impressive to get an amazing performance out of Kevin Garnett.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, he's good in that movie.
Would the movie have been better, even if you liked the movie, would the movie have been better if Dave Bautista had been the Rock character?
Good question.
Probably. Yeah. He's a little better with like funny stuff. Probably.
Or Cena. If Cena was in it, would have been better.
Yeah. I mean, probably either one of those guys. Yeah. I put those two on about the same.
I feel like Cena is the
same level.
I think Cena is very funny. Like, I think he's good at being like funny.
Hey, Alec, you watch everything. Did you see that James Gunn cartoon on Max yet, the DC one?
I did not. I've seen clips from it. I haven't watched it yet, though. I did watch it.
I didn't ask you, asshole.
Yeah, fuck you, TJ.
Sorry.
But I would think, like, God, your kids will probably love Red One. Like,
I was thinking kids would probably be.
It's just, like, can they sit through 2 hours and 5 minutes?
I mean, they've sat through all the Marvel movies.
Why the fuck is that movie not an hour and a half long? Like, you know what I mean? Like, why does that have to be that fucking long?
Probably because it's a net or a Prime original, and they just don't care how long they are.
Yeah, you're probably right.
It's inappropriate. Like, it's like a PG or a G.
But like, it's probably PG, or it might. Oh, they cuss in it. It might be PG-13.
I mean, that's fine. If it's in the same,
Santa Claus is like, motherfucking shit.
Man, they can suck my cock.
Like, everybody is, like, fully committed to their, like, J.K. Simmons of Santa, he's, like, a gym bro. Like, he has a huge, like, gym at the North Pole, and he's, like, benching, like, 400 pounds.
Like, remember when he got all yoked for a fucking Batman or whatever, and you never saw him in it, basically?
Yeah, he's let it hang out in this one.
I wonder if he got.
He was an absolute unit for that stupid Chris Pratt time travel space monster movie I watched.
Oh yeah, you hated that.
The Forever War or whatever the hell it was called.
Watch your damn mouth.
Tomorrow War.
That's why I forgot all about that.
I didn't.
I also watched the first two episodes of The Penguins, which, despite me not wanting to like it, are both really good. It's off to a good start.
Yeah, I haven't watched
it. I think I like it so much because it could just be a story it just happens to have some characters from Batman in it. Like, the story is just like a mob story. Really.
It's The Sopranos, isn't it? I mean, that's what everybody keeps saying. That it's
I never watched The Sopranos. I did not. I watched a few episodes and did not care for it at all. Mob stuff, like mob intrigue, does nothing for me. Really good. And Colin Farrell's really good in it.
Oh, yeah.
He is. Like, I thought the movie was not great, but he's really good in this. And it's, so far, two episodes in, it's really good.
And it's got that chick that...
Christina Milioti from Palm Springs. Hot.
Yes.
She's a big fan. She's really good in it. Who else is in it? Clancy Brown is in it.
Is he reprising his... Oh, no, that was the guy from Mindhunters. Never mind. Disregard, I suck.
Who were you thinking of? Oh, you were thinking of Powers Booth?
Powers
Booth. He's from MacGruber.
You think that Jack Palance? No, Holt McClenny's in fucking one of those Snyder Batman movies for like 10 seconds.
He's in the beginning of Justice League. Batman beats him up, and it's in a really confusing scene because he's like, well, the mother box is coming. The
parademon shows up.
And the parademon. What the fuck? Oh, God.
He uses his fear to attract the parademon. Oh,
stupid ass.
Why do I remember that? Anyway, I can't wait for James Gunn's Superman.
Yeah, I think it's going to be good.
I think so too. And the poster has him and Crypto on it, and I'm all about. Crypto.
And apparently, fucking Guy Gardner is in it, and like Mr. Terrific is fucking in it, and like,
isn't it supposed to be like All Star Superman though? Isn't that the base?
Yes, that's what he said. It's like, it was his biggest influence writing the script. So, I mean, that's my favorite Superman story.
Yeah,
so.
But you couldn't just straight up make that into a live action movie because it would be fucking insane.
No, but if that's your like jumping off point, I think that's pretty solid.
What was the guy who was basically like Willy Wonka for superheroes?
Oh, yeah. No,
the guy from All Star Superman had like the multicolored top hat.
Right.
He was developing like sun eaters, like all kinds of weird,
second
creatures and stuff.
It was when Grant Morrison was really in his weirdo groove.
Yeah, that's a great fucking book, though. It really is.
It is. It's one of the better Superman. It's one of the best Superman that's not like an Elseworlds story.
Yeah, it's like that. The Red Sun, I still like, and
Red Sun's great.
What's the one? What's so funny about Truth, Justice, and the American Way, or whatever? The one with where they have it's supposed to be like
it's the one where they fight. He fights the authority. That one's really good. Yeah, they made a cartoon about it, and the cartoon's not very good. I forget their names. They were called like. They weren't called the Authority, but they were like...
They're called the Elite because...
Yeah.
I think it was the Elite because they spun it off into like Justice legally because they didn't get the point of it, so they spun it off.
Of course. That's usually how it works.
TJ?
I watched one thing. I watched the new A24 movie, Heretic, starring Hugh Grant.
I believe it's pronounced Heretic.
No, is it?
No.
I think it's Heretic. A movie I was really looking forward to. Like, I thought the trailer looked really cool, but like the movie is like a big wet fart. Like, it sucks because it's basically a three-piece movie. Like, it's a bottle movie, and the three main actors are really good. Like, Hugh Grant gives an amazing performance as the villain of the movie, and the two. So it's about these two girl Mormon missionaries that, you know. Whatever, what is it called? It's called They're on a Mission, right? When they have to go to
It's called a mission. Yeah.
So they go to this house where, you know, Hugh Grant is because he is like said that he's interested in learning more about the Mormon faith or whatever. And then it turns into this whole like weird ass like Saw thing going on basically. And like again, the thing that's really frustrating is that like it's set up so well to be a good movie. Like the first like 45 minutes are so well done and very tense. And like, again, like all the performances are great. The two Mormon girls are very, very good, and they're very different, right? Like, it sets you up to think, like, the one Mormon girl is kind of been born into it, whereas the other one is more, like, her mom converted to Mormonism, so she's a little bit more, like, street smart, whereas the one born into Mormonism is a little bit more naive. So they play along that line, and then Hugh Grant is amazing in his performance, and it's just, it sets it up so well, and then, like, when they finally get out, like, why Hugh Grant is doing what he's doing, is such a fucking wet fart, and it's so, like, that's it. That's,
I was a Mormon once, and I don't believe in it.
It's worse than Cheerio. That. It's fucking worse than that. It's literally the comparison I would make.
Is he just, like, a fucking, like, hardcore atheist? Is he, like, some fucking, basically, like, armored skeptic guy?
I mean, basically, yeah. And, like, no. the thing is that, like, it reminded me so much of, like, we watched it on the show a million years ago, but remember 9mm? Eight millimeter.
Who doesn't remember
some kind of monster?
Yeah.
Caligula's Day Snuff.
Yeah. That is such a great part of the movie.
He is the mind of a child.
Remember how that movie, like, the whole, like, revelation as to why they're doing it is because they could. And it's like, that was so fucking lame. Like, I'm going to spoil the movie because I really think it's kind of lackluster, but, like, literally Hugh Grant's whole motivation is that, like, he discovered that the true religion is control, which is, like, the lamest fucking thing ever. And, like, he's
that Ready, like, Remedy video game?
No, but that's a great game. But now he's discovered that, like, religion is bullshit, but, like, it has the power to, like, control people's minds, and that's the real power of the world, which is so fucking stupid. And it's such a, like...
I mean, it's stupid, but it's true.
It's correct.
I
mean,
it also sounds like it was written by a 14-year-old.
Yeah, I mean, great. It's correct, but it's not impactful or interesting. And, like,
correct and dumb.
And it's not, like, something that you wouldn't come to the conclusion of when you're 13 years old. Like, the problem is that Hugh Grant in the movie is described, and is the way his character is written, is that he's this, like, super well-read, like, wants to take down religion from, like, knowing everything about religion, right? Like, he's this super intelligent, like, well-read, studied guy, and his ultimate, like, conclusion is so fucking dumb. And then, like, you know, he's basically, like, torturing people to, like, confirm his hypothesis, which is fucking stupid. I don't know. The movie sucks. I was so let down because, like, the beginning is so good. And again, like, everyone is trying. I think that everyone in the movie is doing, like, their damnedest for some, like, really shitty writing. But yeah, it's not very good. And I shouldn't be surprised because these are the same guys that wrote that Adam Driver fucking dinosaur movie that came out last year.
Ooh, 65. Same 5 million or whatever.
Yeah, same writers, directors made that. That made this, and it's trash. I wouldn't recommend it. I watched the Creature Commandos thing too. It's not a movie, but I really liked it.
Is the whole thing out, or is it just?
No, it's week to week.
Okay,
but it's good, and they have GI Robot, which is, like, a fun character, and get ready to see a lot of GI Robot memes, because his whole bit is, like, if you're a Nazi, he just kills you on sight, and, like, that's all he wants to do is kill Nazis.
Based,
I saw clips of that. He's like at, like, some kind of, like, awards dinner, and he's like, these people look like they could be Nazis.
Well, there's a part where he's
like,
goes,
there's no Nazis here. That's exactly what Nazi would say.
I saw a clip where he's looking at, like, a Jenga tower, and he identifies a swastika and just shoots up the whole room.
Yeah, it's fucking incredible. I really like it. And, I mean, I know we have a long way to go before, like, we really get to see the fruits of the James Gunn, like, DC cinematic universe. But, like, this is a good first start. Like, I like the tone of it a lot. I like the animation. It's a lot of fun, so... great voice cast. Show favorite Frank Grillo is the voice of Rick Flagg, which is fun. So,
isn't he dead, or is this not canonical?
I don't believe this is canonical. I'm pretty sure this is non-canonical. I'm not entirely sure, but anyway, Gogs.
I watched two things.
Two things.
No, that was enthusiastic. I watched Eli Roth's Thanksgiving, which I enjoyed more than I expected. It was like really over the top and like really schlocky and like really kind of like grindhousey in its like kills and just general plot conceits.
Kills and spoilers.
Gogs, was Thanksgiving one of the fake trailer grindhouse movies?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
It was. And but this is like, it's done, like it's weird because like the performances are all very earnest and very sincere, but it's all just stupid as hell. And like it's wild. And like some of the kills are just like bananas. Like a woman gets brained with a shopping cart, and that's in like the first 15 minutes. Like the whole, I don't know if you guys are gonna watch the movie or not, but the whole thing is they're doing like I Know What You Did Last Thanksgiving sort of situation, where there's a Thanksgiving, last year's Thanksgiving, there was a riot at the local mega store because everyone wanted a free microwave, and that resulted in multiple people dying in relatively humorous ways and other people getting injured. And this group of teens were sort of at the epicenter of starting the riot. And then this Thanksgiving, there is some killer all loose dressed up like the guy who invented Thanksgiving, I guess, who's from the town that they're from, like Plymouth, Massachusetts.
Thanksgiving.
Yeah, Bob Thanksgiving. And they're wearing Bob Thanksgiving masks and hats, and they're killing people with axes and all sorts of wacky stuff. And they're like tweeting about it. And then like they're trying to figure out, and they actually do a good job of like laying the groundwork of like who is the killer. Like you could, like you're kind of guessing around like who it is, the whole movie. But like, I don't know, some girl gets like swept kicked and lands like stomach first on a table saw, and it's like silly. It's, I don't know, the whole thing's real bananas. So I liked it a lot more than I thought. So good job, Eli Roth. That's three movies you made that I like. And the other movie I watched 2022's Smile, because it's Smile 2 all over like promotions and stuff. I didn't think Smile was that bad. Like I hated it. It's like a poor man's It Follows, but I didn't hate it.
Yeah. How'd you like the second one?
I didn't see the second one yet. I wanted to see the first one first. I wanted to see what everyone was smiling about. But the
I haven't seen the movie, but their like viral promo work for it was absolutely top tier.
Oh yeah,
sending people to like sporting events and like right behind home plate. I'm thinking the World Series. Yeah, and just doing that creepy smile at the camera.
And they were like Good Morning America and stuff.
Yeah, that's a hell of a like viral marketing.
But you didn't. I didn't realize you saw TJ. You didn't care for it.
I hated it. I thought it was terrible. I thought it was the most fucking generic bullshit ass horror movie I've ever seen. And it was like all it was like a cornier version of It Follows with like nothing. I hated every minute of it. It felt, in fact, like, there's that scene where they're at like the birthday party. It felt like a fucking parody of a horror movie. Like I absolutely despised it. I thought it was trash.
And I didn't. So there you go, audience. You decide.
Yeah, I thought it was horrible. I really, really hated it. Like a lot. And then I saw they made another one, and I was like, oh God, even more of that derivative bullshit. Like you also have to understand, like, I love It Follows. I think It Follows is a fucking masterpiece. And like, this is just like, this is like if you like had to like copy It Follows for your homework and just change a few things. Like, it's exactly what it is. It's just, it's everything I hate about like mainstream horror movies. It takes all the teeth out of that movie and makes it into this corny bullshit movie. I'm not a fan.
Well, I like both films. So there we are. And I'll watch the second one. We'll see how bad it is. It can't be any worse than Terrifier 2. But we, you know what?
I mean, to be fair, I hate that movie also. So
stay tuned, dear listener. And let's find out what Gogs thinks about Smile 2. Will he be smiling? TBD.
All right.
But also, I saw, I missed last week's show, but I saw Love Actually in concert with Alec, and it was lovely. It was,
yeah, that sounded fun.
It was a good time. That movie rules. Yeah, Hans Gruber's kind of a dick to his wife. Anyway, should we talk about Penitentiary 2?
We kind of have to.
Yeah, we're contractually obligated.
Man, I can't wait for you to. I wrote down some fucking notes.
They're not like.
This synopsis is going to be something else.
Well, I had to go back. I didn't write these live. Like, afterwards, after I digested and I meditated on stuff. Well, after I meditated on it a little bit, I just had to write it down just so I could remember all of the beats in this movie.
Because
this
movie is nothing. I got to be honest. We all kind of had like a big chat in our group text, and usually I want to save that for the show, but like I kind of wanted everything written down so I'd remember. There's so much insane shit in this movie. I kind of wanted to have it written down so I wouldn't forget a moment of this insanity.
It's impossibly dense. It's like a Thomas Pynchon novel, except interesting and fun.
I only wrote one thing down about this movie, and I'm going to say it right now.
Go ahead, please.
This movie made $3 million.
Wow.
On a budget of $365,000.
That is a 10x return, damn near. That's pretty good.
Almost 10-time multiplier. Like, it's a certified banger.
And that's like in 1982 money. That's like $1 billion.
Yeah.
I'm going to say one thing before we get started. I text TJ, I'm like, did some lunatic joking around do a 4K scan of this movie? Because it looks really good for a movie of this era. And Vinegar Syndrome, those fucking sociopaths, did in fact scan a 35mm print of this movie for the Blu-ray.
So real quick before we get into the synopsis, is this Mr.
the best
T-
movie ever made? I'm going to say yes.
Yes, no, it is. It's a cinematic masterpiece. Now, is this pre Mr. T in WrestleMania 1? Like, Sean, you might know this. Is this pre Rocky 3?
It's 1982.
Rocky 3 is what, 84? 83?
Well, it's Rocky 3 is the
Mr. T one. Yeah, I'm sorry, Rocky 3.
I said Rocky 3.
Someone said Rocky 2.
I said Rocky 4, probably by accident.
Rocky 3 also came out in 82.
Same year. Huh. Big year for Mr. T.
Because I thought it was kind of weird that Mr. T was in this movie, but like not the main guy or the villain. Like, he's also
referred to as Champ, so it might be in the same universe.
He's also kind of the hero of the movie.
He's also credited as Mr. T, but with a lowercase.
No, it's not. It's in quotes. It's Mr. quotes T.
Some kind of ironic T.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, Mr. T is in this movie, and it's fucking amazing. Like,
ever been a guy that's made so much of a career out of one letter?
No.
Like, what's his real name?
I have no idea.
Tickle Pants. That was a Conan joke. You remember the
secrets
or whatever?
Him on Conan one time doing the in the year 2000 thing.
It was in the year 2000.
In the year 2000.
In the year 2000. Yeah.
Mr. T's real name is Lawrence Trudeau.
So it's Lawrence Tierney.
Penitentiary 2 was Mr. T's first role where he was credited.
Wow.
He was in the Blues Brothers in an uncredited role. Oh. And then in some TV movie where he was, that was a comedy sketch.
So I guess the A-Team was after Rocky, I guess.
So it was Penitentiary, then Rocky 2.
A-Team's 83 to 87.
And then he was like on one episode of a bunch of different shows.
Yep. I wonder this guy when, a gangster. His real name is Lawrence.
Sean, when was WrestleMania 1? Where does that factor in? That was like, 80?
Maybe, I don't know.
Because he was in WrestleMania 1, right?
Yeah, that was the whole Cyndi Lauper and all that WrestleMania 1.
Anyway.
All right. Well, anyway.
About Mr. T.
Shout out to owner, player, coach, writer, director, producer.
Oh.
Jamma Fennaca.
WrestleMania 1 was 85. So it's well after all this stuff.
All right. So I've never seen Penitentiary 1.
Nobody has.
Nobody has.
Nobody on earth has.
Thankfully, you're treated to this young man. So here's how the movie opens.
Movie opens with ending credits, by the way.
So movie
opens, like, it has like a freeze frame with the credits. Yeah.
Movie opens like no fucking like intro, no fucking song. It's just like it just cold opens.
So they Star Wars it. So you get this guy walk up to a house. There's a woman that's happy to see him. There's a child that's happy to see him.
There's a guy kiss between the man and the woman who are brother and sister.
She keeps calling him brother. And like I said, I texted Sean during this that like Too Sweet must have had some kind of makeout clause in his contract because he is just, I mean, every like scene where he has a kiss, he is just going for it, dude.
Well, he also like legit fucked Jade Kennedy on film. Like I've seen it. Like, he was married to her for a while.
Hell yeah.
Leon S. Kennedy had?
Yeah, yeah. Right before he joined Stars.
Also, it's hilarious that Too Sweet's real name. What Gogs is talking about is the guy that plays Too Sweet's real name is Leon Kennedy, which I cannot stop thinking about.
Yeah. All right. So,
And he looks just like Sugar Ray Leonard. Like, he looks so much like him.
But we did Penitentiary 3. Didn't we find out that he's like friends with Sugar Ray Leonard?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And the band.
Nice.
Oh. So this guy comes home and everybody's happy and they're like, oh, I think they're calling him, I forget his name. His name is like Matlock Too Sweet Jones.
His name's Martell, I think, is his first name.
And they're all like, happy. I wonder
what's happening in this movie.
Well, so here's a fun fact. Then the movie, they all go into the building, right? They go into this nice presumably a California residence.
We normally call those houses, but go on. And,
they go to the living building.
Yeah, and then we're treated to a story crawl a la Star Wars. And when you Google this,
crawl is amazing.
I'm going to read it word for word. You can't look it up. You Google these words, it will not give you so here it is. I had to put the movie back on and then video and record it on my phone because it takes up, it wasn't just one picture's worth. So here we are. Our story continues with our Martell Too Sweet Gordone trying to resume a normal life after serving time for a murder he did commit. Too Sweet was able to get an early parole through the efforts of the prison warden and the warden's brother-in-law, Sam Cunningham, a boxing handler. Sam is impressed with Too Sweet's considerable boxing skills when he witnesses Too Sweet's upset triumph over the penitentiary's own undefeated Jesse the Bull Amos, more on him later, in the finals of the annual penitentiary boxing tournament. Too Sweet's parole obligation to him is to be employed by the handler Cunningham for a 2-year period. So my man did murder. This is ad lib. My man did murder. Got out after 3 years because he's nice with them hands and just got 2 years of boxing parole. Boxing
probation. Like it is a condition of his parole that
you must do box. Violence. Mr. Merker, you must do violence. He moves in temporarily with his sister, an attorney, and her family. He gets a job as a skating messenger delivering legal papers for his attorney brother-in-law, Charles's corporate law firm. Too Sweet hates boxing. He doesn't.
He hates it.
He doesn't report to Sam Cunningham and is eventually tracked down by his parole officers who threaten Too Sweet with a return to the penitentiary if he doesn't report to his, quote, designated employer forthwith. The parole officer also.
Pause. Yeah. Did they really put forthwith?
Yes, they put forthwith. And this plot line is never addressed in the movie. Like, these parole officers never show up. None of that happened.
Did all this happen at the end of the first movie, or is this like.
No, this is
all this just off this screen happening.
This is our story continues.
This all happens like, between their reunion. And when the movie starts again after the crawl.
Oh, that's a whole nother movie.
That's a whole nother month of exposition.
Like instead of
in like four paragraphs.
This could have been like the proposition, like where they're trying to force him back into boxing and he's like handling the Pinkertons or whatever. But his return to Fistiana is really just based on the fact that Ernie Hudson made it with his old lady. So let's keep going.
Oh boy. I can't wait to talk about Ernie Hudson in this movie.
and his teeth. The parole officer also cautions, also. So, hey, too sweet. Bye-bye. Go to your boxing job. And I can just see him, like, getting to his car and, like, popping back. I was like, oh, yeah, one more thing. The parole officer also cautions him that that half-dead, a vicious killer who had become an obsessed enemy of Too Sweet after Too Sweet fought off his nocturnal advances, has recently escaped from prison, from his prison cell, is on an appeal, at a court appearance on an appeal, and half-dead vows to kill Too Sweet. That's
not how you want to do your appeal, by the way. Like, you don't want to, like, threaten to murder anybody during the hearing.
Right, but then he bails out. And you find out later that his Christian name is Half Dead, because he tells a story about when his mom was talking to him and she referred to him as Half Dead. So that's how this movie starts. And I was there, my jaw hit the floor after this reading crawl that crawl.
Is impossibly long. It's like three Star Wars crawls crammed together, and it's at, like, such an odd angle. Also, like, the condition of his parole is to boxing, but when he gets out, he has a roller skating job and does not want to box, and it refuses to box.
So, yeah, so now
he
the
hates,
movie's
well, down. He hates, Sean, he hates boxing.
He hates boxing. He hates the violence. So anyway, so now he's off doing his roller skating postman job, and I guess he has to deliver a summons to the boxing gym.
Gogs, what do you think the chances were that this was an actual job? I know bike messenger was a job. Was roller skating messenger like some kind of like
universe where you can't afford bikes or second sets? Then yes, I think.
I need one of those vintage fucking Adidas shirts with the fucking collar. Those things are fucking sick.
Yeah.
So he shows up at the boxing gym. And you see Mr. T playing Mr. T beating up this other guy, but then, like, everybody, like, as soon as my man comes skating through the door, they start catcalling him. And then the training dummy walks over to him, and then Too Sweet slaps him across the face, and then that guy's not having it.
Well, he slaps him and then says, "Don't make me hit you." It's like, sir,
you just hit me. Yeah.
This is this is some fucking Dana White fucking logic. It's like slap fighting contest. It's like, well, they're not hitting him.
Right.
My man is conflicted. So
yeah. This guy apparently had a fucking razor blade on him the entire
time. No, that's later. That's after.
It's like five
everybody,
minutes.
Everybody in this movie.
Everyone in this movie has straight razors.
They're so anyways, all shaving in between scenes off camera.
So now,
movie has the most sweat in it, by the way. I think I may have ever seen.
Everyone is very sweaty.
There are definitely scenes where I thought Too Sweet was a wax dummy because he was so sweaty and clammy looking. I was like, this dude is wax.
Too sweat. Now, he's telling the boxing guy, hey, man, I'm not going to box for you. I'm busy roller skating. And he's like, well, you got to. Otherwise, you're going back to the jail. If you're not going to
buy a box,
you can mop up all this piss. And then then they have like a roller skating breakdown where they go to like a park and it's just a roller disco exhibition.
You know what's funny
about
this movie?
They were just skating around. I hit the skip 30 second button twice and then was still skating around.
Yeah.
Not only
how many
this
times
movie...
do I got to hit this damn button?
You know, this movie doesn't have scenes where it breaks away. It has parts where it becomes a totally different genre of movie. Like, this movie stops the whatever nominal boxing plot and becomes, like, break-in on roller skates for, like, 10 minutes. And then it trips in the middle of the scene and they just cut it.
Left it in, yeah.
Oh, it's like, you've heard about movies doing it in one take. This is them just doing it one try. There was no second. There was it.
That wasn't the plan. Well, I guess it was the plan.
There was no
It wasn't an artful oner. It was a budget oner.
Yeah, it's a budget oner. It's full of cuts, but only one try for every scene.
There was no try in the script. It was like every idea he had is in this script, and they never cut it. Like, there's no editing.
Everybody's emotions are on 10 the entire movie.
It's like Capsulon.
Yeah. It's like, so anyway. So after whilst roller skating with, I think, his sister and like everybody
and all
else,
their sexual tension.
Yeah, he turns around and then
for like half this movie, I thought his sister was the woman who plays the lawyer in Brewster's Millions.
Oh shit!
But it was not. The lady who looks almost identical to her.
Yeah. Well, then he turns around and suddenly Clarice is there, and they have like a gentle, awkward hug. And like, I guess I don't know if anything happened in Penitentiary One involving this broad, but they are rekindling their lost romance. Meanwhile, Half Dead is lurking in the background with his boy Simple and Doggy Doo Doo or whatever his name was. What was the dude's name? Was like Doo Dirty.
Can I? It was just say, Doggy Doo Doo.
Can I just say
dirty,
that
he's still dirty because he's dirty? Damn it.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what it was like on the set, obviously, but like Clarice in all her like scenes where she has to kiss Too Sweet, she looks like so fucking uncomfortable. Like,
this movie, it's like Too Sweet is like palpable. I don't know, is like unintentionally queer coded in this.
Yes, 100%.
At least intentionally.
Oh, wait till we get to the fucking the Ernie Hudson scene where they're basically nude fighting. Like that is the gayest. Well,
it is. I missed it in the crawl because I was like so gobsmacked. But Goggs did point out that the whole reason Detra for fucking Half Dead is that he couldn't butt fuck Too Sweet, and that is the kickoff of this entire fucking plot.
Right, yeah, but that's some you know, incel behavior right now when they're not giving it to you and you're
I could be wrong, but like I don't know, it just every time like Clarice and Too Sweet are on the screen together, she looks they have like negative chemistry, right? Like they don't have,
she's got no aura.
No.
Well, thankfully she's not gonna be on screen much longer. So they get back together and they go swimming at his sister's house pool, and it's awkward. And then she is like, they're like, he, you know, my man's just fresh out of the joint. He's, you know, he's excited for the touch of a woman.
He defends his butthole vigorously.
Bro, he is so ready to fuck.
But they're also like, the dialogue is like they're like 16-year-old evangelical kids talking about having their first sex.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, because doesn't she say that she's a virgin in this scene?
Like, but they're both like emotionally like just sort of like children. It's bad.
Which, from the weird director's point of view, like, of course he makes her a virgin because then it makes what happens later even more villainous. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, so now, meanwhile, so Too Sweet is like, he pulled out like, it's like a lounge chair that converts into a bed so they can get it on.
I was going to go back to your point, Sean, about how no scene cuts. Every scene just kind of goes. This movie fucking lets Too Sweet awkwardly pull out a sofa bed when any sane person would be like, you don't need to show that. There's no like, if you cut from a fucking sofa and then to a sofa bed, the audience can assume, oh, it was a sofa bed. You don't need to see
that. That's where I'm going to draw the line in this movie is like, wait a minute. That was a sofa. Now it's a bed. This is bullshit. I'm leaving.
It doesn't cut, and it takes like 5 minutes.
Hey, they spent the money on the sofa bed. Let him show off the sofa bed.
It's so funny to watch him pull out that sofa bed because, like, he has like a hard time with it too.
Well, he is sweating profusely. He looks like he's having a heart attack.
He's not in fighting shape.
Like Sean can appreciate this reference, but he looks characters from like a Shinyu Tsukamoto movie because he always has them like sweaty and weird.
Like, just glistening. I was like, is he still supposed to be wet from the pool? I'm like, no, that was like hours ago. Like, I don't know what's going on.
Also, like, shout out to this movie for like he like legitimately has a fucking boner.
Like, he has a huge hog, by the way. He's doing A-OK.
Somebody committed to like having like the director's like, no, you really want to have sex. In real life, you would have a fucking boner, and he is fucking ready to fuck. Like, it's hilarious.
That's verisimilitude.
So meanwhile, so as he's setting up the couch bed for the inevitable lovemaking, she's like, I want to go get clean.
The geography of his sister's house is insane, by the way, because it looks like they're in like a shitty motel room with that bathroom and couch bed.
It looks like they're in a carport, and there's a car, and like the couch bed's outside, like, but the bathroom is directly adjacent to it, and so she locks herself in the bathroom. Somehow, Half Dead is in the shower with her.
Well, also, right. Like, we didn't really touch on it, but, like, Half Dead and his cronies, or you may have touched on it, I apologize, his cronies are, like, waiting to stab Too Sweet somewhere. You just see them in a car.
And they are brandishing knives to each other just so the audience understands that they have knives. It's the pull-out sofa of stabbing.
But, like, later, what's funny is that later in the movie, like, Too Sweet's, like, overwhelming loser charisma even like wins over the cronies a little bit. They're like, he's not that bad.
Did Hackden explain to Do Dirt and fucking Simple Jack like why they're going after him?
I'm certain he didn't.
Okay. Yeah, I can't imagine he would.
Probably not.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of a weird flex to be like, hey, I gotta murder this guy because he wouldn't let me bang him in prison.
Also, like, shout out to Too Sweet's lawyer's sister who talks like she's on TV and her 9,000-gallon hot water heater. Like, the most steam has ever come off of a shower in human history.
Yeah. So now, all right. So Clarice gets irreversibled. And then Ernie Hudson's, you know, just really making a meal out of it. It's really uncomfortable.
He rapes her to death for like a good 25 minutes.
And then literally to death, too. Like, I don't know if you guys, like, when you watch this movie, you didn't expect Clarice to be dead, right? Like,
No.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be like Kickboxer. I expected that.
Yeah, I thought she was going to survive. I thought it was going to be, like, obviously an awful thing.
I don't know if I've ever mentioned this, but Kickboxer used to come on WNUV all the time. And the scene where the girl goes, Tong Po, he raped me. For some reason in the dub, they changed it to pay me. And it makes zero sense.
That's way worse.
Yeah. So anyway, meanwhile, this is happening the whole time. And this, like... like, for an uncomfortable man, my man is horny because he is just sitting there on the bed like, hey, you ready
and yet?
Like, hey, you should be clean by now. Like, he just keeps saying stuff like that. Then he gets up to investigate Clarice. The door explodes.
In two different directions somehow.
And then him and Ernie Hudson have an underwear fight where his weapon of choice was a glass vase and against a switchblade. They go round and round. Somehow, the police are notified. Too Sweet is beating the life out of Ernie Hudson, out of Half Dead. The police show up. You can tell it's not shot in 2024 because both men make it out of this alive. And they get carted off. Well, actually, Too Sweet just gets taken care of. This is not a violation of your parole. And now Half Dead gets to go to just a regular hospital.
Right. And Too Sweet, like you said, he just got out of prison on his boxing parole. And they don't ask him at all.
There's nothing. There's not. They don't even ask who's in the wrong. They don't ask.
They don't even ask what happened.
Right. So anyway,
yeah, there's literally a dead woman 5 feet away, and they're just like, whatever.
She's over there sous-viding in this fucking tub with the steamiest water of all time.
Sous-vide.
So now, Too Sweet has made an oath to himself.
Oh, no.
Brings this up later.
This is my favorite part of the movie, where we cut to him talking to his sister, and he's like, I'm going to become the champion for the children. And it's like, what? Like, what the fuck?
Later, he's like, my promise to Clarice was to become the champion of the world. And we're like, at what point?
When did that happen?
When in the 30 minutes of your relationship on this terrestrial Earth did you make this promise?
Maybe,
sir?
It's in the first one.
It's not. Maybe. She's not in the first one, unless she.
Oh, okay, great. Even better.
So I now
the actress was not in the first one, unless they recast her.
That's so now, Too Sweet goes back to the boxing gym, and he tells Tomato Can Sam, like, "Hey, I want to be a boxer." He's like, "I'm gonna get you apple pie and gloves and stink and whatever you need.
We're
gonna
bubbly batteries, lottery tickets."
Right, and then meanwhile, I forget if this happened before or after. The guy, the sparring partner for Mr. T, is tired of being beat up, even though that's his job, and brings a straight razor into the ring.
This scene is so good, so fucking good.
So now Mr. T is going to be part of the training corps for Too Sweet. Also, I guess freshly released out of prison. Is maybe this Don King analog of Seldom Seen, who is just there, but his fits are bananas throughout the film.
Also, the name Seldom Seen is really good.
Like, yeah.
All the names in this movie are great.
I'm telling you, this is the fucking Crow. Like, the woman really gets raped to death. Everybody has all the crime guys have insane nicknames. Everybody's screaming all the time.
And Ernie Hudson's in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, true.
So now, Too Sweet's done his mourning, and he goes out clubbing. With Seldom Seen to go steam on some chicks. And
immediately finds a new lady.
Two new ladies. Meanwhile,
earlier in the movie, and I know we're getting off track, but he did unironically roller skate to the boxing gym, which I thought was one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life.
Hey, Gogs, and you're probably going to talk about it, but like this is another scene that just goes on forever, and there's like some band that plays like half a song for no fucking reason. It's like,
yeah. Okay. So do Dirty and Simple, they spring half dead from the hospital.
How do they spring him?
They spring him by they put pantyhose over their face, and then they scare
a cop so bad that he poops himself.
Yeah. So they deliver him to a hooker, I guess. She brings to potato salad and tries to romance him.
Pause before we get to the potato salad play, which I do love. They're like, "What's that smell?" It's like the no holds barred Dookie, and the cop says,
"It reminded me so much of the Dookie scene." That's so funny you say that. The cop says
verbatim, "I think my bowels. You know, I done doo doo my bowels. He doo dooed his bowels."
I mean, that's what your bowels are for.
That's what your bowels doo doo. Come on.
Nice.
And he's getting like threatened with this knife, and the camera it's just like shot on his limp hand holding this impossible like uncooked glizzy in a sub roll.
Anyway, they spring him, the half dead's with the hooker, they're watching TV, and I think on TV is when they announce somehow that they got Too Sweet a chance at to rematch or fight Jesse the Bull Amos again at the penitentiary.
Briefly have like a Mississippi Masala moment where the hooker's like, "You should see your mom." Like, what is this? What is happening in this movie?
And I forget what anecdote he says, but he says something akin to, "Well, my mom always said half dead if you don't," and like, "Named you half dead," and that's when I cut out. I lost. So. Are they wait hold on, no, when he's with Potato Salad Hooker, who also pulls out a straight razor on him.
It's, yeah, well, of course.
They're watching the first fight, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so never mind. Okay, so my timeline's
right. He also spits potato salad all over her and then eats it off and then threatens to decapitate her and put it on a nail next to her wings.
It is a wild romance that these two are on.
That chicken looked really good though.
So now the chicken looked tremendous. So
real good.
So Two Sweet, I'm sorry, Two Sweets out clubbing with Seldom Seen all night. And then the next day, they're like, yo, you get to go fight the champ back at the penitentiary. And Seldom Seen's like, he ain't ready. And then Two Sweet's like, I'm as ready as ever be. And then yeah,
there is absolutely zero explanation as to why this sanctioned, at least by the WPF, right, title fight is being held in a penitentiary with almost no security.
And also, like, being viewed apparently on national TV. I mean, this is in the
70s. Just gone out. Yeah, he is, like, not ranked. I would assume
in the penitentiary because the bull is in right now.
So by this logic, when Wesley Snipes gets out of jail, he should be the number one contender to Iceman Chambers' title, right? Like if we're following the same logic,
yeah. So technically speaking, he should still be able to fight whilst in prison.
Yeah. Also, this is like the biggest boxing event in the country, but it's broadcast to the country while being viewed by in person about 30 people, which includes people gambling and like a saxophone band.
The saxophone guy,
another diegetic saxophone,
wailing.
That's right. There's a saxophone in the third one. That's right.
Right.
I forgot.
Also, this looks like this. It reminded me of like going to see an indie wrestling show, like when we went to that one at the firehouse. Yes. That's the level of pomp and circumstance at this fucking jail welterweight title fight.
I remember that was the time we saw James Ellsworth for the first time, and I had a fucking heart attack when I saw him on Raw. I was texting you. I was like, "That's the fucking guy that was wearing the panties that sold us their tickets." Yeah, that's hilarious. Shout out to the fucking Legion Hall in Catonsville.
All right, so now we're back in the prison. There is a commentating crew that just can't help but speculate on whether Two Sweet has been sexually assaulted or not whilst in prison.
He goes, I remember this because the word choice, this is like another fourth with it. He's like, Two Sweet, a sobriquet I hope he didn't receive from his extracurricular activities here in prison. Like, he said sobriquet. Also, he alluded to this man getting raped on national TV in 1982.
And he's joined with the current light heavyweight champion, like Kyle Buckhouse or whatever his name was.
There's a part where Kyle Buckhouse or whatever his fucking name is, he is just staring off in the distance, and I thought they were going to address it, but they never do. But he's literally just like stare. It's later in the movie.
It's later in the movie where the guy's like, I'm glad you were able to return from your like sobering beat down and loss of your title. And I thought it was a comedic beat. It was just him just sitting there.
It was just him just fucking staring away at nothing. I was like, what the fuck?
That's amazing.
It's so weird. They never address it. He's just like, it was incredible.
So now you got Jesse the Bull Armano or whatever his name is, and you got Two Sweet and Seldom Seen, and you have Mr. T dressed up like the genie from the lamp, holding the genie's lamp, spewing, but he says Two Sweet, purple smoke erupts from the end of said lamp.
No, knowing the universe this exists in, it is entirely possible that Mr. T is actually a genie. I just want to put that out there.
Could be magic. Yeah. So now the fight commences, and everybody's starting to, Two Sweets, he's ducking and diving, he's dodging the punches, even though they said the bull's like a power puncher, and Two Sweet's supposed to be a speed guy, but like they didn't play it like that. And then, you know, Two Sweet's doing his thing and bop, bop, bop. And then he starts getting, you know, lumped up. Dude, and then continues to get lumped up.
The bull beats the shit out of him.
It's not like Rocky where he went the distance and lost. Like he got the brake speed off him.
He looks like he got shot in the eye with a rubber bullet.
At one point, he's half hanging out of the ring ropes, and his sister is hugging his head. I'm like, lady, you can't do that. That's not allowed. He gets up, he keeps going to his corner, and then like he's been knocked down like three or four times, and then he gets up, and before the next round can even start, he just collapses. Right, he knocks himself out.
He is thoroughly embarrassed on TV.
Somehow, this performance captures the heart of America. Nation. Like, Like, there is not a dry eye. Like, everybody, like, he could run for president. Like, everybody, like, the push behind him after this one time only, never before seen travesty of a performance. The entire world's behind him.
Well, you know, if there was anything that the general public loved in America in 1982, it was black guys who just got out of jail for murder.
Right.
So,
also, I forgot to mention, behind the saxophone man who's playing the entire fight, the black dwarf from Bad Santa is throwing dice off in the corner.
His name is the midget, by the way. That is what he is credited as.
I believe he refers to himself as TC at some point. And then he crawls, after he scoops up his $80, he crawls under the ring mid-fight to proposition a prostitute who's in the front row of this fight. But he doesn't have enough money, so he scurries back to the dice game. But more on that later.
A prostitute whose gender is questionable? Or am I putting that on myself?
No.
I think she's a lady.
I think
I think you're putting that on yourself.
Oh, okay. I just self-reported, my bad.
But, like, for a second I thought you were talking about the people out in the crowd later on in the film that are rooting for Too Sweet.
The one is the guy.
Well, the it's one, like, yeah.
But they're like prison bitches, right? Like
right. I thought that's what one of these prostitutes was.
Like it was from last week.
That's
prison.
Like their job. Yeah.
We don't call them bitches. We call them ladies.
Sorry. The
prison sex workers.
Come on, yeah. Andrew Tate.
It's a real fucking shame we didn't do Prayer Before Dawn, because that whole subplot in that movie, I'd love to dance around that.
I will. I'll dance right into it. So now...
Well, that's not even a subplot. That's like the plot.
That's the main thrust of the film.
Gog's consternation.
There is so little kickboxing and so much...
It's so good.
Applause. Gog's, is there an appropriate amount of boxing in this movie for you?
Oh, that's a great question. That is a wonderful question.
I'm going to say yes. There's actually a fair amount of boxing in this movie. Yeah, yeah, it's not great. We're not talking about three-level shots.
It's real bad boxing.
Like, we didn't hire HBO Fights to, like, film it, but, you know, there's enough of it.
What's the name of the champ? What's his? The Bull? This thing where he, like, punches down and then pulls his hand back out like he's, like, doing, like, apple bombing. It's, like, very, like, I mean, who the fuck fights like that?
So anyway, so Too Sweet just gets
These guys like boxing, like they fight like Bernard Hopkins on like old diet pills. Like, I don't understand what any of them are doing, but it's very awkward.
So,
I got TJ.
So Too Sweet gets skull dragged on national TV, literally and figuratively.
Like, I will say the effects when it comes to like blood are so funny.
The makeup is disgusting. Oh my God,
it's so no, good. Yeah, it looks like The Night Comes for Us. Like, he is just soaked in it. So then the next day he looks fine.
He fucking heals quick. He's like, so fucking
the next day they go to the boxing gym, and then the boxing promoter is like, look at all the letters I got. This is from Terre Haute. Like, this is from Alabama. This is from, and he's got like, it's like Miracle on 34th Street. And this is the second boxing movie we've watched where a letter writing campaign was used as a plot device to promote a heavyweight title fight. So, even though someone else should get, because he showed nothing in that fight that would garner a rematch opportunity.
Heretofore amateur boxer who got beaten into an absolute pulp on national TV, and he's given an immediate rematch
based on the Electoral College. People are just like, you know what? We want Too Sweet back, and the world is behind him.
The least charismatic person possibly on Earth.
And this time he's going to do it right. And he's out there clubbing and partying, and seldom seen is in like this dashiki fit trying to propose to the lady they met at the club, and Rudy Ray Moore is yelling at them until he finds out it's
shout out. Our second boxing movie with Rudy Ray Moore in it.
Dude, I gotta be honest. When Rudy Ray Moore showed up, I popped so huge. Yeah. I was like, ah, shit.
Because there was that scene where they watched Dolomite for like 5 minutes in the Great White Hype.
Yeah. It was so much fun. I recognized him right away. I was like, oh, that's awesome. And also, I love how he's just in the movie. He's just in the movie. Like, he's not like, you know, I imagine that they understand that the crowd that they were marketing this to is going to know who Rudy Ray Moore is right away.
To Goggs's earlier point, a guy named Seldom Seen to dress like he does seems like it's at cross purposes, because I feel like everybody's going to notice this guy.
He's very seen.
It's like a Little John situation.
Oh, it's like tiny. He's incredibly flamboyant.
So Rudy Ray Moore's like, I got all my poker money on you, too sweet. And then, meanwhile, this entire apartment building erupts into like a fire escape rave, and just every person in the world is out suddenly chanting Too Sweet's name.
Yeah, fucking Linda Cardellini's hanging out the window yelling for him.
I don't know what the fuck is going on.
Who is that white lady? Who is she and what is she doing?
Now we're in a training sequence where Too Sweet is jogging through, presumably he said he ran through an obstacle course with his sister and her husband to the picnic table to get ribs. Meanwhile, Mr. T is with a harem of ladies in a tent, and my man is in gold. He's on gold on gold. And he comes with a chalice of Chablis, and he is walking down to this picnic table. And then everyone starts saying something about light beer. And was that like a joke from an ad campaign from the 80s that like I didn't get, because everyone else seemed in on it? They're like, you didn't do all that jogging for a light beer. And then everybody goes, light beer.
I remember that.
They just fall out laughing. And I'm like, what is happening here? So then they eat some ribs and Too Sweet's ready to go. But Half Dead's over in the car watching Too Sweet with Dookie and Stupid and Stupid. And meanwhile, the entire Too Sweet crew starts chanting. I forget what they go ahead, I believe, is what they are chanting. And they're like, they're line dancing around him, chanting this, and with him and his new woman. And then Half Dead's like, I got a plan now. What we're going to do is we're going to fix the fight and bet against Too Sweet. So that's what happens next. The fight is about to happen.
Did they need to fix the fight, though? Because it went pretty poorly for Too Sweet the first time.
But, you know, so now.
I can't get it. Every time I think about this movie, I smile. Like, I honestly, it's like,
so much fun.
So Too Sweet's like, hey, and this is not how this worked. They're like, hey, can I set the terms for the fight? They're like, I believe they say, yeah, you've got the drawing power, not the welterweight champion. That's not how
it works. No. Yes.
You're the one with the juice now, Grandma. So what do you want to do? He's like, my choice is, for production and budget reasons, we are going to go back to the penitentiary boxing ring.
Well, they have to have
it. We can only afford one set.
It's the title of the movie, so they had to do it, I guess.
Was it in this part of the fight or in the first fight where there's some weird, again, talking about scenes that just don't make any fucking sense? The commentators interview the like warden of the prison and like, thank you for having us. And the guy just kind of
this fight.
I think he literally is just like, you're welcome.
No explanation. Not like, oh, this is really going to bring a lot of eyes to the prison or whatever.
Really going to bring a lot of prisoners here.
What is his motivation?
Hope prisoners write, like, sign commitment letters to this prison, seeing our excellent bossing.
We gotta put the prisons in the fucking transfer portal.
The in-ring interviews. Hey, Too Sweet, you just got the shit beat the fuck out of you. How's that feel? Like, well, you know.
You win some. No, you don't.
Don't they interview the bull in the same way?
They interview him first, and then they interview Too Sweet. They're like, and the loser, Too Sweet. You're showing a lot of chutzpah out there, kid. So now they're getting ready to have fight number two for the welterweight championship of the world. And there is no way in God's green earth that Jesse the Bull Romano or whatever his name is a welterweight. Like, there is
no chance. Also, no chance that these governing bodies sanction this fight like 2 weeks after the first fight. Like, it doesn't seem like that much time has passed.
A welterweight needs to be between 140 and 147 pounds. I have a 100 pounds on a welterweight right now. So, like, the Bull don't got it, my guy. So anyway, let's move on. You got to be kind of a twink. So we're back in stage. And it's time, it's fight time. And Too Sweet, this was Too Sweet's like, hey, his entourage leaves. Then he goes into this other locker room from the locker room where there is like a picture with a woman's tits hanging out. He lays out a Muslim prayer mat.
Yeah, that is weird.
And like, I don't know a lot about the Islamic faith. I know that there are calls to prayer 5 times a day and it's everyone at once. But maybe you can just break out the mat whenever you want.
Well, if you're by yourself, you have to. You know what I mean? Like, that's part of the obligation.
And was this one of the 5 times? Maybe it was. Did he find East? Maybe he did.
He didn't even wash his hands up to his elbows.
But then there's a lady's titties out just right behind you. And then you got.
I don't think titties are haram.
Yeah, well, Muslim listeners, are titties haram? I'd love to know.
They might be harumph. So now,
is Nate Muslim?
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, Nate's
he's pretty nice.
Yeah, he's probably Muslim.
Yeah.
I also think that
Nate.
Half Dead might be able to, like, who's the Marvel character who can, like, fold space-time into himself and be anywhere at once, like Portal or Gateway? Because Half Dead just shows up anywhere.
Why is that racist?
Because he's black. Also, that's a good one for that fucking, if anybody ever comes here to the Comic-Con and you need to name black characters that aren't electrical.
Without electrical power.
No one's going to say Gateway. Everyone's gonna forget Gateway.
Well, so anyway, Half-Dead bamps in there with a clown wig that presumably he got from the hook.
Even more conspicuous.
Bro, the clown wig with the fucking... Also, like, horn or, like, B-movie slash, like, cult movie fans, how has nobody made the Too Sweet shirt that fucking Half-Dead is wearing? I want that shirt bad.
Too Sweet, also, Polo.
Did anybody mention that Too Sweet is wearing a necklace that has two words, and it says, Try God.
I didn't even notice that.
Like, got milk, try God. Like, it's what does that
fucking mean?
I like the shirts that his team wore, that just like the Lacoste polos where they just embroidered
too sweet
across them.
No, but the one, Gogs, the one Ernie Hudson is wearing is like iron on letters.
It says too sweet.
Yeah, it's fucking awesome. I want one so bad.
So now,
puffy letters.
So Half Dead's like, hey man, I'm gonna kill you, but first I am going to let you know that you're gonna lose this fight because I've got your sister and her husband and that mouthy brat kid of theirs at knife point. And if you win this fight, they're gonna be eviscerated. So lose the fight, and I'm also gonna stomp on your left hand. And he does so.
Also, again, pretty good chance he's gonna lose the fight anyway.
Pretty good chance. The odds are not in his favor.
Yeah, he got his fucking ass beat the first time. It's not like
he lost on a fucking shitty decision.
It was like man versus car. Like,
I mean, again,
he doesn't bet on car.
A more sane movie would have him go the distance, and it was like, you know,
make
what I mean?
Rocky won, right?
It was close.
Go to a decision.
But right? No, this movie, it's like he gets the fucking shit beat out of him, and then he's going to win the next fight.
So it's like, I think it's pretty safe to bet on Rihanna this time. It's like, no, they're still going to lose.
Yeah, this time the
anybody
okay. Put the money on the generals.
I laughed.
So anyway, so then he's like, "All right, cool, bet." And he goes back to the thing, and then Mr. Tico's bag is like, what took you so long? I'm gonna put on these gloves. He's like, what looks wrong with your hand? He's like, don't worry about it. Then they go out there and they got the genie lamp. What
looks wrong with your hand, by the way?
They go out with the genie lamp. There's smoke. There's mirrors. The sax man is back. The dwarf is still throwing rocks. Like, it's just the first part all over again.
So again, there's nothing in Two Sweets aesthetic that suggests Arabian Nights or anything. So this is just something Mr. T's doing on his own.
Yeah, he bought that stuff before the movie.
He bought that from his house.
I got this magic lamp. This will help you win.
I don't think we talked about it, but like, there's no like, you know, there's this scene where Two Sweet hooks up with Seldom Seen, but there's never any like training montage or like any kind of proof that he's tried to do anything to be better at.
They jog over a hill. I think they punch a bag a couple of times.
There's a couple
of
punching bags. Yeah.
Is there?
Go ahead. Whoever that was.
That was me. But so before, well, you say your thing and then I'll get back to
you. Oh, I'm not entirely certain what Seldom Seen's function is because they don't need a promoter. Like, what does he do?
Oh, I thought he was a trainer. Because, like, the way they act, like, I thought he was like.
I thought Mr. T was his trainer.
I don't know.
Maybe Mr. T
is a genie.
Mr. T is also the former champion.
Well, there's also a whole bunch of trainers they don't show until the end.
Yeah,
he has like eight guys in his corner that all have the Two Sweet shirts that you'd never see in the movie up until then.
So before I miss this part, there the two ladies that Seldom Seen, and the one woman that the Seldom Seen proposed, she ran away like he was trying to finger her, like she actually is like, I'm sorry, I'll marry you but anyway. So his Seldom Seen.
That is true. This Seldom Seen guilted a woman into marriage.
He begged the lady into accepting a proposal. So Seldom Seen's fiance and her best friend sing a national anthem.
It's a legally distinct national anthem.
It's like I don't know if I've laughed harder in our group text when I think it was you, Gox, who was like, is the national anthem copyrighted?
And everybody knew exactly what he meant, too, because that is fucking bonkers. Like, well, what are so they
weird.
Doing?
It's so weird because they go, and with our national anthem, whatever those two broads' names are, and it's like...
Tigra and Bunny, or whatever.
Right. And then they proceed to sing a song I've never heard in my life, and it's like,
it's like never... a wholly original spiritual.
You've never heard that song?
No.
That's the Black National Anthem. Lift every voice and sing.
That's literally what it is. Oh, I'm just
they're singing of the Super Bowls now.
Oh God! Well, there you go. TJ's just
good job, TJ.
Sorry,
but it's
a national anthem,
right? In everybody else's racist defense, when the movie says we are singing the national anthem, like we're pretty sure we know which song's coming.
Yeah. I mean,
Francis Scott Key is rolling over his grave.
When am I supposed to yell "Oh" in this other song? You know, I was waiting
the entire time.
Yeah.
Anyway, the national.
Sorry, black people. I didn't know your national. I'm
sorry, guys.
I'm sorry.
No, your national.
To be fair, I don't like the regular national anthem either. It's trash. We need like a new one. We need like a dubstep, like Skrillex, like national.
No, it should just be Thunderstruck.
Yes.
There we go.
Even though none of the members of that band are American.
Who cares?
Francis Scott Key was like sort of British, probably.
I think they're Australian, if I remember.
Yeah, Australia is just like America anyway.
Yeah, it's just the British version.
That is called McDonald's Maccas.
Yeah.
Maccas?
Yeah.
Do Muslims have to pray towards Macca? Then
I'm sorry. Only the burgers.
All right.
It was an awful joke.
Oh my God. Or McFlurries are wrong.
I can see my time.
So now I'm
gonna go mute for the rest of the
episode. I mean the boxing match is secondary. The boxing match at this point is secondary to Mr. T beating half dead, fully dead.
Again, in any normal movie,
for like 20 minutes.
In any normal movie, Too Sweet is wants to get his revenge on Ernie Hudson, but in this movie, Mr. T beats up Ernie Hudson to death until he breaks his neck.
Who may not even be aware of Half Dead or his connection to the events of Same up until right now. He's just an acting guy.
So yeah, so Too Sweet's getting beat on. He's got his left paw out there, not doing nothing with it. He's just in there eating shots so his family doesn't get killed. Somehow, his family,
who are being held hostage by Dookie and Jim Brody's, who say,
"Don't know.
Yeah. I want some red wine," and he's like, "No, I'll give you this instead." He's like, "I said red wine," and he proceeds to grab a bottle that has got red wine and immediately start drinking it.
Red-ish. Well, also, dipshit or whatever his name is, like he's like the state champion dominoes player, but he can't count.
Yeah.
Well, and then simple making a concoction, and then Dookie or whatever wanted to have like he kept telling his Too Sweet sister to make him some food. They're watching it,
and that never paid off either. I was like, it was fucking hilarious every time he said, "Now make me something to eat," but they never cut back to him eating any food. I was very disappointed in that.
So they're watching on the closed circuit TV broadcast, and they go, so now Mr. T sniffs out this plot. Beats the Christ out of Ernie Hudson. And like during the fight with Too Sweet, there's a weird smash cut of just Ernie Hudson just rolling into a wall, but it's like it's literally like a frame and a half. And like, it was right.
I thought it was a mistake with like the cut.
There was something
wrong where it like glitched, but I'm glad everybody else had the same.
It might have been a weird edit. They fucked it up on like putting it together on the bed, and then it was oh, we can't put it back in because we threw all the fucking frames out.
Yeah, it's amazing. And then he fucking like he puts him in a fucking Kimura.
He's like, I'm gonna torture your body. I'm gonna torture your soul. Like I'm gonna like ring. But we don't actually know if he actually kills him or not. But the threat is there.
It cuts back to the fight for some fucking reason. Oh, actually, I'm sorry. It cuts back to the little person trying to get some fucking pussy. And then the woman's like, "Okay, I'll fuck you under the ring."
So Too Sweet's nephew unplugs the TV. And Simple and Do Dirty plug the TV in together. Okay, go ahead.
Real quick before I forget this. I missed it when we talked about it before. Because we haven't really talked about that little kid that much. But there's a part in the first fight where the little kid is like, I don't know what kind of reaction they were trying to get from him, but they were obviously trying to get a reaction. And the father is just bouncing him on his leg, but the kid's kind of crying. It is the most David Lynch-ass cut of a scene. Because the kid's just like...
In the language of this film, they brought a 3-year-old to sit ringside at a professional boxing match held in a state penitentiary.
Prisoners that are just like out and about
to watch your uncle fight a legitimate prisoner. Anyway. So now the family gets the drop on Do Dirty and Simple because they were plugging in whatever.
Pause real quick. I'm sorry. But since both his sister and her husband are lawyers, wouldn't you think that they would have some legal shit to do to help him to make their appearance in the movie relevant other than to be
There's like nothing. Only legal avenue here is because he became a roller skating delivery man for legal papers. Like that's they're not working on his appeal. They're not trying to prove him innocent.
He's like some kind of process server in a universe where everybody's gay.
Yeah. So anyway, they teleport to the I guess they live next door because they are at the penitentiary in a flash. And now he knows that he can do what he couldn't have done in the first fight and fight back. So he then one-handedly beats Jesse the Bull Romano. And then he is now crowned and this is how the movie ends, everyone.
Yeah.
He's crowned the welterweight champion of the world. The ring is flooded with his well-wishers and friends. And then the dwarf and prostitute emerge from under the ring and are just gawking at the camera. And then it says, this movie is dedicated to my mom and dad.
Well, isn't there a cut earlier where the little person and the woman are under the ring and the whole crowd is chanting something?
Oh no! You hear her chanting.
It also, they're saying like imagine.
I believe. So there's
I believe in apple pie.
There's this weird ass.
I believe in marriage. I believe in the smile on a children's face. Yeah,
when Too Sweet makes his comeback and is like beating the champion, the main commentator says, "I believe in like all this weird shit." And then like it makes sense if Too Sweet makes like two punches and knocks him out. But he persists to just say, I believe, for like 10 minutes because like the guy just like keeps getting hit in the face. And then it cuts to the woman underneath also saying, I believe. Again, it
becomes absurdist.
In a normal movie, it makes sense. But like there's no editing in this movie. So like the commentator just says, I believe, for like literally in film 5 minutes. Like it's wild.
I have a stretch question here. Do we think, and it probably isn't true, but do you think that the commentators in Dodgeball, where he's saying, I've seen the Eiffel Tower, I've seen the pyramids of Egypt, I've even seen a grown man satisfy a camel. Do you think this is like a callback to just
I've never heard anybody talk about this movie before?
Okay,
yeah, no, ever. Me neither.
And like, so anyway, we all swim in pretty deep water when it comes to shit like this,
and I love like kind of B movies and I love blaxploitation stuff, and Penitentiary is something I've really never really heard about. Like when we watch Penitentiary, I want a making of this movie.
Yeah, so this needs a Lost in La Mancha, like in the worst way.
Oh, absolutely. I really want to read any interview that the director has done, because I'd love to hear what he has to say about
oral history of Penitentiary 2.
And this is the most canon. This is the most canon, non-canon movie I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible.
And then it's dedicated to the brave Mujahideen fighters of Afghanistan. Oh, dedicated to mom and dad, and they have like the most boring. It's like Bob and Lisa or something. Alex screenshotted it. It's so fucking funny.
Isn't
it like Bob and B or something?
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's the movie.
I mean, it is.
Perfect. Anything else that we want to get into before we get into Todd Knuckle Shuffles?
Maybe we talked about it with Penitentiary 3, but definitely this movie, it's like so like it's not incompetent because the guy like knows how to make a movie. He understands
the parts of the movie, but he doesn't understand how to like put them together at
like
all.
He's seen movies.
Yes.
It's like it's so like erratic.
Yes,
but it's almost like high art in that way. You know what I mean? Like it is beyond cinema.
I think I said it to you. Like it's so incompetent. It's almost an art film. Like it's so out there and weird. Like it almost
even the incompetence had to be a choice. Like there was
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, absolutely. I'd agree with that.
It's like you know, I can't imagine anybody like read this script because they'd be like, "What?" But if they did, they're like, oh, you got to cut this thing. Like, I ain't cutting fucking anything.
Yeah, like, that's a great point.
The only thing I'm cutting is all of the setup to the movie, so it will make sense.
What the fuck? Right. Like, what the fuck does this script look like? You know what I mean?
It's like he lost the first 40 pages and had to do the scroll from memory. that's what happened.
He's like the Joseph Smith of fucking screenwriters.
He's got a hat that he reads out of.
It is, and this movie is banana. I want to show this movie to everyone.
Yeah, this is, I mean, we've talked about this a lot on the show, but like people that are like, oh, I like bad movies, but then they like talk, oh, Spider-Man 3. It's like, no, this is it. This is like the kind of bad movie I could watch over and over and over again, you know?
Like, what's that movie we sent you, Sean? Like, Black Nazis of
Black Gestapo,
Black Gestapo.
That movie fucking rules.
Yeah, but that's way more tight than this is. This
100%
all also over the shop.
For as all over the place as this movie is, it moves pretty fast.
Oh yeah, I wasn't bored. It's too insane. Like to be, you know, what's the old, you know, if you're going to be boring, you better be confusing. But it's not boring. It's just confusing.
It's just confusing. Yeah.
Alec, all right.
Was your favorite part of the movie the glistening?
Hell no.
Alec hates
my favorite glistening. Part. Yeah. I don't like that word. My favorite part were the scenes where I could fast forward like a minute and the same thing was happening, but it was non-dialogue or anything. Like, there were like two or three of them. Like,
oh yeah,
the one with the roller skating. There was another one right near the beginning where I just hit the 30 sec. I was watching on my phone. I just hit like the skip 30 second button like three times, and it was the same exact thing happening. No dialogue. No, I didn't miss anything. Not that there's anything to miss in this, but
yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate a movie that stays with stupid things for so long.
Yeah.
You can just kind of zone out.
Built in.
Yeah, this movie is absolutely insane. I don't know if I've ever watched a movie that's more insane than
also, this. I wanted to mention this. I texted everybody in the group, but it's important for the people that listen. This director has also made a movie where a guy gets out of prison and exacts revenge with his prehensile dick.
What movie is that?
I forget. I sent it to TJ. There's a screenshot of it where like his dick is in shadow and it's like all the way down to his shins.
Of his dick. Yeah, it's amazing.
The character of Half Dead was also in the first movie, but it was not Ernie Hudson. It was somebody else.
That's hilarious. Ernie Hudson, by the way, is like, he's so much better than every other actor in this movie. Like, you can tell he's like an actual actor, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like he's trying his damnedest, you know.
I found he's the movie
really good in this.
Okay, can I read this thing? This other, yeah,
please,
is it Jemai Funaka? Like, how do you say guy's name?
Sure,
okay,
he's dead, so he don't care.
All right, the movie is from 1975. It's called Welcome Home, Brother Charles. And here is the synopsis, the tag from IMDb. After being released, a wrongfully imprisoned black man exacts revenge on those who've crossed him via the power of his newly sentient penis, which may or may not be the result of an experiment gone wrong.
Sentient penis.
Sentient.
Yeah.
So yeah, he made prehensile, also sentient. It has
he was actually
mind.
Originally it was originally called Soul Vengeance.
And what a name! Him, oh my god!
Soul Vengeance. Welcome home, Brother Charles.
Well, he reused that name kind of for Soul Sisters Revenge, but he made this in UCLA Film School. This is like his Eraserhead, the fucking sentient penis movie.
Dude, I need to know everything about this director.
It's got the same boxing promoter. I'm looking at the stills. The guy who's the boxing gym owner is in this movie.
Nice.
But yeah, you got to figure a guy like this probably, like, you know, once
pretty,
he made
pretty tight knit circle.
Yeah.
Thanks. So like a real, he's a real Christopher Guest.
Yeah. All right. Five knuckle shuffle time, guys. We've gone long enough. Alec.
One.
What? Oh my god, come on. No way.
It's funny how bad it is, but I didn't find it so bad that I enjoyed it. Like, it's hilarious that somebody made this as a feature trying to be serious.
Yes, I agree.
But this movie is garbage.
Oh.
And somehow it's still better than Penitentiary 3. Which is,
I mean,
worse garbage.
Mole.
Yeah. They don't know their wines. That was the big thing that got me. They can't tell the difference between red wine and rosé. Like, come on. You live in California.
Yeah, too bad.
The mouth kiss, like, it's so fucking weird.
Yes, it was very weird.
Like, it's such a weird choice. It's like Tom Brady and his son. His mouth kissing all over the place. The guy who plays Too Sweet acted something a couple of years ago after like a 30-year break.
I saw that he was in something in like 2021.
But man,
Yeah, this Resident is. Evil 4.
Yeah, TJ.
Oh, this is a 9. This movie's amazing. I loved every fucking minute of it. I thought it was the funniest thing I've seen in a long time. I love, like, just messes like this, and, like, this is impossibly easy to watch. Every scene made me laugh and made me confused. Like, there's so many weird-ass choices in this movie. I loved it. I thought it was great. I'm dying to watch Penitentiary 1 now. Like, I'm hoping Penitentiary 1 is as insane as the other two. But no, I love this movie. I love corny B-movies, and this one is kind of, like, one of the best because, again, like, you can tell the director had a lot on his mind but didn't really understand how to fucking do anything and, like, didn't know how to edit and didn't know how to hire actors. And, like, I love this movie. This is like a black version of, like, a Faithful Findings or, like, a fucking, a Tommy Wiseau movie. Like, it's amazing. And everybody's acting is so fucking weird and all over the place. Like, I don't know. I thought it was great. I was laughing the entire time. I really enjoyed it. I'm shocked I've never seen it before. But yeah, it's a fucking 9 for me, dog. I loved it. So yeah, Sean.
Oh, it's a 10 for me. I fucking love this. Is like a Rosetta Stone of shitty movies, like these two. Like, I can't decide which one's crazier. Cause, like, the third one, he goes back to jail and has to fight again, and there's magic and stuff and whatever. But, like, the second one in theory takes place in a magicless universe, but also includes, like, a boxing parole, and we're having championship fights in jail for no reason, and, like, two nude black men can kill a woman in a bathtub and neither of them really gets arrested. And fucking, this movie fucking rules. Like, I love it so much. I don't know. This is the kind of movie I really like when we discover on here.
Yes, me too.
And it's just like, it's just bonkers. Like, it looks really good. Like, it's not hard to watch at all. It goes quick. Like, every choice is like the opposite choice anybody else would make.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Like, it's such a Mad Libs thing. And, you know, even, you know, just from the basic kind of, like, language of plot structure, you know, the fight, again, we talked about, like, the first fight, you know, he has a better showing or he gets screwed or something. No, he just gets the fuck beat out of him. And people are, again, so enamored by this guy that, like, has a traumatic brain injury. They're like, put him back in. We love this guy. We love,
like a week later too. Like,
yeah. I mean, there's no chance the first one is as crazy as these two movies, but, like, I'm holding out hope.
Yeah, it's going on the Plex, like, after the show. I can't, like, I gotta watch it.
I'd love to see this at the Senator or something, you know what I mean? Like, but we'd be the only people in there. It wouldn't be like when we saw Big Trouble in Little China, the place is packed or whatever, but this deserves that kind of screening, I think. I enjoyed it tremendously. And you can tell we like a movie generally when we're, like, just texting about it nonstop. Because, like, me and TJ were texting about it, and then Gog started watching this morning, then we went right back into it. So it definitely sparked a reaction, even if some of us, the reaction was not as good. Gog.
I'm also giving it a 10. I need to show everyone I know this movie. It is a masterclass in how to make a movie without knowing it. Like, it is...
Yeah.
It is just... It is so bananas. Like, and it is just, like, you don't, like, talk about subverting expectations the entire time. I don't know what's going to happen next.
You, like, can't even get expectations together because it's so crazy.
No, it's just too, it's too bonkers. I am sitting here looking down the barrel of spending $3.99 to get an original Penitentiary 2 movie poster.
Oh yeah.
Like, it is, this is something that's, I shan't forget this film. Like, this is a wild, wild ride. Like, this is a perfect, you know how TJ's talked about in the past, like a party movie, like a movie you can just have on in the background during a party. Yeah. Like, this is that. Like, you can just look over at any one time and people think they saw four different films. No, it is just this movie happening at once on a loop. Absolutely wild.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like,
there we go.
One of the craziest fucking movies we've ever watched. And I mean, we watched the third one and it's kind of hard to, wow. The poster for Penitentiary One is fucking ridiculous. It's just Too Sweet literally punching the cell like walls. It's pretty amazing.
Oh, it's pretty good. Yeah.
Though the poster for Penitentiary Two is also great, but like, it doesn't really reflect the film like at all.
No,
which I'm not surprised.
Who has a gun in Penitentiary 2?
Nobody. Like, yeah. Ernie Hudson's never got a pistol the entire time.
Also, it's funny. The place I used to steal my movies, they tag things, and the tags for Penitentiary are prison, gay interest, boxing, L.A. Rebellion, gay, and gay theme. So there you go. But they also marked down the Garfield movie as a fantasy war film. Also, there is a picture. Well, we said that didn't Too Sweet have like ass fucking in prison? That was like part of the first one. There's literally a screenshot of a man slapping a man's nude ass in the description here. So there you go.
Well, there we go.
I'm sending a screenshot from the first Penitentiary movie. Stand by.
Thank God. All right. Who's got the last pick for the month?
Who hasn't gone?
It's me.
Oh, shit. It's Alec.
Y'all are screwed.
He's going to pick Cinderella Man.
So my pick is The Fighter.
Oh, I like that movie.
Hell yeah.
I thought you were going to punish us.
Well, I might. Unless... Okay. Kraven the Hunter becomes available on the Plex. And then we're watching Kraven the Hunter just because we need to.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to... We'll get it eventually, but it's in theaters this week, I think, so I don't think we're going to be able to get
it. Yeah, I was just holding out hope.
But I like The Fighter. I'm interested in revisiting that.
Not you. Not you. No, hey, I'm Gordon Bombay. Not you.
The MTV girls.
When are we gonna do the Mollies? I guess is the question.
I don't know. Didn't we do them last year in January?
Yeah, it was in January.
All right then.
I'll put the fighter.
Have a,
do we have a five Tuesday month or a five Monday month?
Yep. So the next Monday is the 23rd. The following Monday is the 30th.
The following Monday is. Oh wait, that's not New Year's Eve. That's New Year's Eve. We're good.
New Year's Eve. And who cares about New Year's anyway?
Yeah, who gives a shit? Also, both holidays this year suck because they're in the middle of the week. So it's like, ugh, it's the worst. All right, everybody, that's the show. We'll see you later. You know what to do. Watch The Fighter and fuck David O. Russell because he's a piece of shit. But I remember The Fighter being pretty good, but we'll see.
But watch Penitentiary 2.
Yeah, just watch
Piss Out.
Yeah, watch Penitentiary 2. It's great. All right, everybody.
Bye-bye. Goodbye, everybody.